Hello and welcome back to the latest episode of the Master of None podcast. I am your host, Stephen Murphy, joined by the usual rugby crew of Westy and Sam. Sam rocking an especially sexy cap that may or may not have been a Christmas present from me.
And jersey,
which is all. Yeah, you're fully rocking the Christmas presents tonight between myself and Westy. New Canes jersey, Master of None cap. Show it off there, Sam. Take it off. Oh, yeah. Let me see the man at the back. Oh, yeah. That's the beauty.
That's the money shot.
That's the money shot. These are not available, just in case anyone's wondering. They were just Christmas presents. But we're not here to talk about that. And Wes has got a lovely haircut. Sorry, again, just to clarify. Yeah, this is for anyone just on the audio, this is pointless. We're here to talk about...
Let me give you a tour of my room, look.
Yeah. Go on the YouTube if you want to see the juicy behind the scenes. Champs Cups weekend was on. Loads of rugby on, which is great. Four Irish provinces, two wins, two losses, so, you know, not too bad. Unfortunately, Connacht obviously on the losing side, and Ulster, so my home province, so not good for the podcast, but two wins from Leinster, they're so boring, aren't they? Like, try and have, like, fun talking about Leinster, it's impossible. What do you talk about? Like, how good they are? Great. But, you know, anyway, we'll start with Munster boys, had a pretty good win against Harlequins. First 20 minutes, Munster looked really good, I have to say. Like, strong running, offloading was good. Defensively, the line speed was ferocious. But only 3-0 up, sort of after that passage of play. Like, are we kind of worried that they don't really have the firepower to get over the line?
If you're Munster, look, first off, you're coming off a very successful couple of weeks in the Pro 14 or Pro 12 or Pro 16, whatever it's called. Yeah, they were pretty strong at the start. They pulled ahead pretty early, two pretty nice tries. But, I mean, the real talking points of that game are always going to be three yellow cards. Like, Harlequins playing, 50 minutes with only 14 players? Like, they really shot anything good they did, they really shot themselves in the foot by just not having the extra man or the level playing field of men, even.
It was the entire back row that got yellow cards for Quins. Sam, what did you think?
Yeah, I caught up this morning. I didn't see it live on Sunday, but no, it was like they looked very impressive at the start. But yeah, you're right. Like, you're not capitalizing like that, and if you come up against a better team, like say if they're playing a Exeter or Leinster, maybe one of the French teams, they mightn't be as lucky as to only be 3-0 up. You know, they might get punished for not taking more advantage of it. I thought Quins kind of shot themselves completely in the foot. It was just silly, and I thought, you know, the Marler hit, the late hits. I just thought they were silly yellows and they're malicious, and I didn't like it at all. And I think that it was more of a tactic of trying to get in towards Ben Healy. And I think Van Grand said that as well after the game. He said it was definitely a tactic that they did. They were trying to get in, see how, like, test the mettle of the 21-year-old, which I don't like that as a tactic. If you're like, and something English teams would do quite often, you know, Sexton's been on the receiving end of it before. Out halves tend to be the ones on the receiving end of it, especially if they're young, just absolutely trying to kind of get under their skin and force them to make the mistake instead of just backing yourself and trying to be the better team and winning. So I thought it was a great result for Munster in the end. It's weird now the way that the tournament is, like a win at home, unless it's a five pointer, is actually probably a little bit of a disappointment. All the teams ahead of them are all 5-pointer win, like they all have 5 points, and because of the way that the kind of pools work, it's, you need to be getting, you know, 3 wins out of 4, and really you want 2 5-pointers for your 2 home wins. It's kind of scary that's the tournament. It's making for an interesting tournament. You know, everyone's kind of go all guns blazing this weekend or on their away games or their winnable away. So, you know, they'll be happy with the win, but I think that they'll kind of be disappointed in the first couple of minutes. They didn't get a try or two maybe and get that 5-point win, get the bonus point to kind of get them through, because I think that they put themselves in a much harder position now, especially with Claremont, who looked scary enough against Bristol. So it'd be tough, but, you know, you have to appreciate that, like, Craig Casey and Ben Healy played, and they looked like they were actually kind of, when they came on, they were better almost. They were more cohesive, and that's just testament to what you said, like the couple of weeks of playing well together. Those players will have a confidence, and maybe throwing all the internationals straight back in isn't the best plan. You know, we saw Leinster didn't look like they skipped a beat at all, kind of integrating one or two, but not all of them, and rewarding the players and keeping those partnerships together. So it's a tough one. You know, you can't be turning down your internationals when they get back either, but, like, I thought that Casey was very good, and I thought Healy was very good, so.
Yeah, a few more standouts. Ty Byrne had an incredible game, was man of the match. His kick with that left foot was incredible, wasn't it? Like, I know it was probably a bit wind assisted.
Kick as well. That's what everyone's forgetting about Delahunt's font. It was a bit earlier in the day, but Ty Byrne just absolutely boots the length of the field.
Oh, and he was the first person there to put pressure on the kick. It was incredible. Like, you could see him bulleting up the pitch, and then he did a big like cheer afterwards because he just obviously was an incredible player. But the Healy point about the late hits on Healy, it's a compliment in a way. You know what I mean? They weren't doing it to JJ Hanratton. So what does that say for JJ Hanratton? I think I'd be giving the keys here to Healy until Carberry's back, because I'm sorry, I'm just still not sold on JJ. I just don't think he has. Healy's very young and very raw, but there's a bit of a spark there with him. His kicking is incredible. That kick that he, like, halfway line, and it never got over like 20 feet, but it still met the distance. It was incredible. And he's a big man.
With the Healy one as well, just you mentioned it there. Like, there's big, really strong rumours with him being Scottish qualified that Glasgow are after him. Hastings just announced today that he's going to Gloucester because Cipriani's left. So there's a spot there for out half of Glasgow. And unless the IRFU can make some promises, you know, Healy has the right to choose the better opportunity there. And, like, you know, that Munster playing second fiddle to Carberry in the long term, and then in the Irish setup being second or third fiddle or fourth, depending on if Harry Byrne comes through and Ross Byrne, how he kicks on. You know, there's every chance that he goes. And I know that the Munster fans on Twitter have been kind of saying, oh yeah, he'll never go, you know, he'll appreciate it, he's a good Munster man. But you look at the careers of some of these kind of two-cappers, when they could have gone to Scotland, made a bit of money, and in fairness, like, you know, played a lot more often, starting 10 or whatever, you know, getting into your 10 once Finn Russell retires. And then there's always a pathway. You can still play for Scotland and earn big bucks in England as well. So it's like, it's definitely a tempting opportunity for him there, you know. We'll have to see what the IRFU do in terms of that.
Yeah, 100%. Westy, what do you think? Ben Healy, what's your verdict on him?
I don't know. I mean, I think logically it's probably not a good time to go to Glasgow, because arguably, as you say, he is kind of definitely more informed than JJ Hanrahan. Okay, he's a little bit greener, a little bit less experienced, but we've said it about him before, and we kind of hope that it would change, but JJ Hanrahan still not really a big moments player, whereas Healy's kind of already shown he can do that. Okay, he's a bit younger, a bit greener, he's not the full package yet, but also we've no projected return date for Carberry, and I know this probably really won't happen because it's too logical, but Carberry should not walk back into that team. Carberry, like Dan Levy, should be slowly integrated back in and kind of show that he's still at the same level, because it's over a year out at this stage. And even the 3 months before that year out, he still wasn't playing very well. He was clearly carrying knocks. But knowing Irish rugby, he'll probably be put straight back into starting 15 from day one he's available, and he'll be out for another 6 months. So if I was Healy, I'd hold on. I'd be pretty confident in getting starting Munster jersey.
Yeah, I think Munster need to give him the keys. Like I said, like, let him go as far as he'll bring you. Like, it might not work, but I don't think JJ is going to lead you to the promised land either. Do you know what I mean? So he might as well go. If JJ was so much better than him, I'd be like, okay, fair enough. But from what we've seen, I don't think he is. But what do I know, I suppose? But
yeah, I'm not saying he definitely will. I'm just saying that it's a tempting opportunity. And if you're looking, you know, the IRFU are supposedly not offering contracts till January. You don't know where you stand. Glasgow have just gotten, like, Hastings gone, so there's a position there for you. You're Scottish qualified. There's potential to go in, and, you know, with Finn Russell being up and down in terms of, like, whether or not he gets selected in Scotland, you know, you could push on there, potential to earn a lot of money. Glasgow could sell you that they'll build a team around you. It's going to be tempting, especially because of, like what Westy said. The Irish teams have a history of letting players walk back in after injury, and, like, you know, Carberry was brought down there as a great white hope, the first out half in a couple of years that'll do. And I think that if you're Healy, there is a tempting there. Probably ends up staying, you know, hopefully the IRFU cop on and, like, keep him there. But there's, you know, if he's looking at it and there's, like, the two Burns, then there's Billy Burns. How many Burns is there to play out half? There's Harry, Billy.
Tyke Byrne looks like he could play out half too. So add him to the Byrne list.
Do Burns at Leinster.
Burn notice.
Burns up in Ulster. Carty, Carberry. Then, like, potentially... Like,
Mad Dog 3000.
Yeah, Frawley, Mad Dogs. Like, there's a lot of there. So, you know, it's tempting. And I think that the Scottish Rugby Football Union could really put pressure on him and just, you know, sell him a little bit of a deal. And depends on his character, depends what he wants, but it is interesting to think, you know, what he'll do, and, you know, we'll see in the next couple of months, because obviously he's playing absolutely out of his skin right now, so his stock's never been higher. So I'd be like, show me the money, lads.
If I could, you know, to be devil's advocate for a second, do you think the RFU would almost rather see him go?
Probably.
Have another player off the payroll?
I can see, yeah, look, they might just be like, look, yeah, less selection might sometimes is better. And he hasn't showed enough yet, obviously, to be like, God, no, we have to keep him. But if you're Munster, you want to keep him.
I think the IRFU were kind of hoping some of the top level earners go and they replace them with the likes of the Healy's, you know, people that aren't going to be on so much. I think with this kind of freeze, I'd say they're probably, fingers crossed, you know, hoping like the likes of maybe an Earls or a Healy or something goes to France for a big payout at the end of their contract and stops the IRFU having to shell out a big central contract of $600,000-$700,000 a year and lets these likes of these Healy's and stuff come through. It's probably more in what they're in it for. I don't think, you know, he's not going to be hugely expensive for the first contract anyway, but you see how it goes. It's an interesting time. I think it's interesting from the IRFU's stance, because we've heard that France and England are like circling, and, you know, Japan as well could, you know, make some moves for a couple of players. So might be a good few big names moving in the next while.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see when that comes around. Another standout performance was Coombs. He has, you know, really announced himself as a baller. He's got, I think, 7 tries in the last 8 games or something ridiculous, which is just incredible. He's looking good. Munster are... winning ugly is offensive to them. I don't want to say winning ugly, but they're winning without necessarily playing amazing all the time, which is a great sign for Munster. Do we think, Wesley, that this could be the year, or are they still just too far off?
Yeah, I mean, like, I would be confident in Munster's ability. Like, as you say, a lot of young players coming through. Coombs, I know Jack O'Donnell is a bit older now, but, like, very impressive when he came on. D'Alende is getting better every game he plays for Munster. I think next week is a big one. Like, I wouldn't be too worried about going to the Stoop to play Harlequins after beating them in Munster. I'd say they'd probably take that one. But going to Claremont to play Claremont Auvergne after last weekend's performance against Bristol, I mean, what did they score, 51 points in total? Like, you really can't write off a team with that much ability to score tries. And, you know, Munster only getting the one try and the penalty try, you know, you'd just be a little bit worried about how they're going to build points. But again, it could, you know, they could play a lot smarter and take their penalties, and I could be proven wrong. But that's, you know, to me, that's their biggest stumbling block. If they beat Claremont in Claremont, Claremont would be easier beating Thomond, especially because it'll be, I think it's the last game they'll play. So we've already seen, I think it was Northampton, say they're going to play a smaller team against Leinster because they know they can't qualify anymore.
Yeah, so
it'd be interesting to see.
Northampton's odds are like 40 to something ridiculous for like a two horse race. It's just incredible. But yeah, Munster, I remember the start of the year that they looked out of sync. They didn't look good, and they somehow still scrapped out the win against Scarlets, and they've just gotten better and better, and they're still scrapping out wins. And the Munster teams of old, that's what they were really good at too. So you never know. Nothing would surprise me this Munster team going forward. We'll move on to Ulster. Ulster had a very tough loss against Toulouse in Ravenhill. And it was disappointing to watch, because there was a lot of good from Ulster. They played pretty well in patches. Unfortunately, just come up against a team that has so much star power in so many different places that a few mistakes here and there, and they just punish you. Like, they started really well. Nice herring try off the back of a maul. They mauled really well and was quite dominant, actually, against that Toulouse team. Madigan then scores a beautiful try off the back of the scrum. Cooney, nice little back play to him, and they run it in, and you're thinking, this is it. They're going to upset the odds here. And then Ches and Colby happens and just seems to keep happening against... I think he touched the ball like 6 times and scored 2 tries. It's just like ridiculous. What did you think, Sam, of Ulster in the early on, in the first half or so?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought I was watching it with Westy, and we were saying, like, this could be the one that they leave behind, and it was inevitably kind of that. They were good and they were close, and they looked like they were going to do it, but they also looked susceptible at all times to a moment of magic. And I know that's a weird thing to say, where you're like, you know, everyone's susceptible to a moment of magic, but I think the Ulster have just, they, in my mind anyway, as someone that like casually watches them as opposed to like religiously watches them, I think that they always seem to look to me like they're absolutely flying, but they're is a weakness that does exist, and it might be a mental thing, it might just be an experience thing, but like the likes of Chesney Colby, like it's not a coincidence it keeps happening. And if you have a player like Chesney Colby and you're playing a team like Ulster, I think you can kind of just be confident that if you can get him the ball that one time, he can do something against you. And I know that's easy to say because he can do it against absolutely anyone, but it's happened a few times for them. I think it was disappointing then in the end that even though it was one that got away, I don't think they really deserved it at all. I don't think it was stolen from them. I think that they were outclassed in the end. But like the Madigan try was brilliant. Some of the play all together was brilliant. I was saying to Wes, he was like one of my favorite players in the league. Now it's Kutsi. Like he's just so strong. And, you know, they were purring for a good bit of it, but they're just not quite there yet. They will be disappointed. I think it was 2 years since the last time they had lost at home. That was to Connacht. So I think they'll be disappointed. Cause,
nice dig, you know, nice dig.
I think what happens when you get onto a role like that is it just becomes like a mental block for teams coming to you as well. They're like, Jesus, they're just so good at home. Like, is there any chance? And I think that now that Toulouse have done that, Ulster are going to have to fight to really put that back in place and try and build up that kind of fortress attitude again. But no, it was a good game. Like, it was an enjoyable game. There was some absolute scorching tries scored. I think I was texting you, Smurf, and you were like, shush, you're ahead of me now. So I was like, oh, sorry, I won't talk again.
Yeah, and then you kept doing it anyway. You would put dot, dot, dot. And I'm like, well, I know something's going to happen.
I was just getting so excited. There was some brilliant rugby, especially in the first half. Like, there was some really good stuff. The Chesney Colby that... I can't remember, is it the first or the second? Well, the one where he's on the ground and he like wiggles his hips and somehow steps me man without getting up.
Yeah, that's the second one.
Yeah, it was just unbelievable. Like, he's what an absolute talent. Like,
he is, but I think outclass was harsh in Ulster. I think that they were, like, they lost Kutsia early in that second half, and he is arguably their best player. And to lose some of that quality, especially in the forwards. That's a massive loss for them. Like, Westy, we'll get on to their decision making, because we all sort of had this debate on Saturday evening. They're down 4 points. They have a penalty in the 22, an extremely just a yellow card for Toulouse. Just get a yellow card. Extremely kickable. We'd kick it ourselves. They go for the corner. It doesn't work. It backfires. They waste 3 or 4 minutes of the 10 minute advantage. I think we all agreed. We think they should have kicked it. You get within 1 point. You get the ball back with 9 minutes to go, and you back yourselves to either win a penalty or get the try, whatever you think. In fairness, devil's advocate here, Westy, their maul was good all day. What do you think? Was that the reasoning for going for
it? Yeah, I think they had, wasn't it two tries off the maul? Herring got both of them from rolling mauls where they got in. I think they backed themselves to do it. I think maybe they sort of came to the belief a little bit that they needed to score, that they needed the bonus point win. They wanted to get the bonus point win at home, so they went to the corner for the try. Whereas they really should just focus on winning it. You know, you have, at that point, I think Madigan is still on. I'm not sure what minute he came off. But you've got Cooney anyway to take any kicks that you want to take kicks. So I think, yeah, I mean, you really have to remember who you're playing against. You know, you're playing against one of the most successful teams in Europe. You got to take that 3 points, get the ball back. You know, realistically, you're getting the ball back, as you say, with 9 minutes to go. And you have to work your way down the field. I mean, yeah, I think. But again, missing McCluskey, maybe they, not McCluskey, sorry, missing Kutsia. He was off at that point. Maybe they didn't back their inter-game play to get over the line for a try. I thought they probably saw this as their time to get that fourth try and win.
Yeah, it's tough.
Even a win and try, a try at that point, still only puts them, points ahead?
Yeah, like, there would have been 3 points ahead, yeah. Yeah, I think.
So then, you know, a penalty on the other side, and you've it level again. So
yeah, I don't know. I think, look, I'm always one for backing, being confident, and going for it. But I think when you're the outside, you know, not the favorite to win the game, especially when you're at home. I think you need to take your points whenever they, arise. And I think they look back and they regret that. But look, you know, I totally get the reason behind it. It wasn't like a stupid decision. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like a brain dead decision. It was, look, we back ourselves here and it just didn't work out. But Toulouse are just so good at just coming up with big moments when they're needed to. I suppose we have to talk about the Stockdale, Colby stepping on Stockdale, because it's been a bit of a talking point. We've always been a bit harsh with Stockdale on this podcast. But in fairness, my issue isn't with him again being stepped by Colby, with everyone be stepped by Colby. It's the attempt at stopping Colby. Like, again, he gets beaten on the inside, which I think a lot of people would, again, Westy, you've played at the highest level. And they always tell you, if he beats you on the outside, you were saying, you know, he's faster than you. But if he beats you on the inside, then, you know, he bet you, basically, kind of thing. And twice now it's happened. And as I think maybe you said, Sam, he's no control over his body at all. Like, he slides into it and then he's, like, over the end line. There's no control when it comes to, like, his body or anything like that. Like, if Keith Earls is in that situation, I think he makes a better stab at it. Does that make sense?
I definitely do think there's a theme on some of the missed tackles that Stockdale's had, and the Colby ones in particular highlight that. But they're not the only examples that you can say from the last couple of weeks and months, is whereby the missed tackle ends up being because he's soft-armed, because he's beaten, as opposed to getting in close or opening his body up. And that's probably what you're getting at. I think he approaches it too quickly in that side, and he stepped quite easily on the inside. And Colby can step, you know, he could step me in a phone box, but, like, I think that what you're saying there is what I was saying at the weekend, which is where it's annoying to see not just you being stepped, but a kind of a quite an armsy tackle, as opposed to, like, even getting in and getting a shoulder and just being beaten. I think that that's the problem, is it's far too common in his game, and it's something that keeps coming up. And then when you're playing against the likes of a Chesham Colby, it's doubly obvious, because he's just so much better at stepping than others. Like, you know, if it's your average run-of-the-mill, like, Pro 14 winger doing that, you might get away with it and your arm might wrap or whatever, but Colby is that good that I think that you need to have your technique absolutely down. And I just think his technique does lack there. And, you know, like, we can defend him as an attacking fullback, and we can definitely argue that we're an attacking player, like an attacking winger, attacking fullback. You can definitely argue that he is weak defensively, and I don't want people to come back at us and say, oh no, that's just one or two isolated cases, because it's far too common for it to be one or two isolated cases. We're talking about this nearly weekly at this stage, so it's you know, it's something that needs to be addressed or needs to be talked about, because if he is going to be talked about as a fullback, which I don't think he should be, or even as a winger, because there's a lot of defensive duties in a winger, that is a part of his game that he will need to improve. He can't rest on his laurels about being faster and stronger than people anymore. Like, he'll have to round his game, because there's plenty of very, very good wingers coming through the Irish system that'll want his place.
Yeah, I think, again, we're not saying that it's not the fact that he was stepped by Colby, it's just the manner that he keeps getting stepped and his attempts at stopping. Like, Westy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think he flies into that in an effort to not give Colby the opportunity to step back inside. He wants to force him to make a decision to go outside because he's a player running at him. But you have to even look at what happens after a tackle. Like, now, again, maybe Stockdale clips him. I'm not really sure exactly how it happens, but Colby loses his footing. So you have to think, if Stockdale hadn't flown in, if Stockdale had more control, he would have been able to stop before he ended up in the siding and get back and get over the ball or make the tackle when Colby gets back to his feet. It's just, I hope I can kind of see what his idea was, which makes it a little bit better, but it's not great defense. It's, again, knowing that someone like that, Colby, has the opportunity or the ability to step back inside you and to fly in kind of all guns blazing for the try line. You know, I just think it's poor decision making. And I think it is reflective of areas that Ulster were let down throughout the game. I think, like, their man on man, their narrow channel defense was so good. But any time they were turned, like, we saw it with the DuPont try as well. Once DuPont broke that line, like, poor old... What's the fullback saying? Mike Lowry, yeah. Yeah, he turns Mike Lowry, and, you know, it's just their scramble defense. Look, it's a very difficult thing, but I just don't think they were to the races at that point.
Yeah, it's what separates them from the top teams. But there is a lot of positives to take from that game from Ulster. We'll finish on, you know, like, they were competitive for the entire game. Toulouse are one of the best teams in Europe. You know, they scored some lovely tries, some nice play. They're missing Kutsia as well, and Billy Burns, who are two starters. So plenty to work on, and plenty of youth in that Ulster team to progress with. So I think a lot of good stuff ahead for Ulster, which is great. We'll move on to the Ulster game, Connacht game, which was a cracker of a game on Sunday. I think we all watched that hungover. I know I fucking did.
I don't know if I remember most of it now, to be honest.
Yeah, it's all just a blur. But this is a great game. Like, in Paris, against that team, not many people gave Connacht a hope. And after going 19-3 down after 24 minutes, I don't think even two biased supporters like yourselves would even give you hope. But an incredible fight back to nearly snatch at the end, and a losing bonus point. I know, obviously, looking back now, you're like, it'd be great to win it, but a losing bonus point, you all would have taken that at the start of the day. So incredible. But we'll get into the performance. Jimmy Duffy was on this podcast last week, and I think he'll be upset with the team when it came to the forwards. The defensive maul was kind of obliterated by Racing, wasn't it, Sam?
Yeah, they were given an absolute lesson, and not the first time it's happened this year, but what's kind of weird is it's so inconsistent with Connacht, because we've had some really strong defensive maul games this season as well. But yeah, when we're against it, it's not going well. It doesn't go well. And at the weekend, Racing absolutely destroyed us. They moved, like, you know, full lengths of the 22 at times. I think one of the tries definitely came from a rolling maul. I can't even remember if another one did. It's hard to kind of remember. They were absolutely dominated. You have to caveat that by just, you know, we had the two Mastersons playing, Sean Maston playing one of his first few games. I know he's played a couple of times, but starting in the back row, and his brother playing out of position due to what we can presume were the positive cases in the camp. It hasn't been announced who was, but it's interesting if that was a choice to leave out some of your better known second rows, would be a very daft enough choice. So you can presume, like, there was no Quinn there, and there's no Thornbury there, who'd be, you know, two starters. Quinn especially would be, you know, he'd bring a lot of physicality to that back row and or to that second row and to the maul and stuff. So it was disappointing from a defensive point of view to just be dominated by that much. But, you know, credit to Connacht. If it's not going well so drastically, and yet we still managed to get back into the game the way we did, I think that there's a lot of positives to be taken. Like, you can fix some rolling maul issue. That's a training thing. That's a bring back big personnel kind of thing. You know, there's a couple of big boys to come back. So, like, it was hard to watch when it was happening. But after the game, retrospectively, I think I can go, like, you know what, if that was the only part of the game that we were absolutely dominated by, you know, last year's finalist, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, 100%. Wes, so what did you think about the game?
You know what, I thought, like, even when we were 19-3 down, I did say to Sam, like, we're actually playing quite well. Like, our defensive setting was quite well, was quite good. Our line speed was very good. It was kind of, our losing our own lineouts was bloody killer. Like, you really can't lose three of your own lineouts in the first 20 minutes. Like, it's just, you know, you're giving yourself a mountain to climb there. I was impressed with how they reacted in the second half. I thought that was amazing. I thought, like, whatever was said, whatever was done in the changing rooms, we fixed our maul issues. We kind of really, really fought back very well. And I think a lot of that comes from, we've spoken about it before, a lot of that comes from getting that try just before the end of the first half. I think you're able to forget about the first 25 minutes, half an hour, and be like, you know what, like, we're still in it. Like, we're still competitive here. I thought man for man, we were very impressive. I thought, okay, Carty wasn't perfect, but some great decision-making. I thought Alton Delan was phenomenal. Paul Boyle was great. Like, great to see Matt Healy have a great game for Connacht. It's been so long since we've seen him get a good run in there. I don't like the narrative of we should be happy with that result, because we could have won that game. I think at a certain point, you have to look at twice where we broke the line and dropped the ball. And, you know, those are two gettable tries that, I mean, they changed the game, so you can't say it would have ended the same. But even at the end, you know, Carty a little bit conservative with the last penalty. If we pushed that an extra 5 metres, we're in a much better attacking position. But at the end of the day, like, this competition for us, the first and foremost thing we have to do is prove that we belong here. And I think there's nobody can turn around to you and say that we didn't deserve to be in that game, because we were for large parts of that game, we were the better team.
Yeah, agreed. Devil's advocate, you know, Racing did have a few slip-ups as well, a few forward passes that they could have scored try-wise as well, with, I think it was Beale and Tate Thoma. But, as you said, defensively, Connacht forced errors. They were up in their face. As you said, Delan was so physical. He put Camille Chat on his arse at one stage, which is tough to do. No one does that, really. So, yeah, as you said, if you put that team with Gavin Thornbury, Quinn Roo, you start Bundy, who obviously, I think, was that for basically rest reasons he didn't start?
I'd say he'd just been playing so much for Ireland. But I would say as well, like, just to go back to the defensive stuff, if you watch the Cardiff Blues game from 2 months ago, like, our defensive shape, like, Sam said he could see what we were trying to do, but I thought it was the complete wrong way to go about things. And if you look at how it's changed now against Racing, I think you definitely see so much improvement in Connacht in that game.
I defend myself there, please. I think that the shape was. I think the shape what I was talking about with the Cardiff Blues game a couple of months ago. I think it's been evident throughout the season that they've wanted that quick winger up and to get him in. And I think that what was happening was either people didn't trust each other or people didn't know the set the ways it was supposed to happen enough against Cardiff, because there was a lot of just bad mistakes, one-off errors. But I think when it was like it started to really show like cohesion at the weekend, and that's what was impressive. But I think that the all season I've been saying that the shape looks much better than we have in the past. Like the last couple of years, our shape has been really all over the place, and I think that they have like a game plan this year, and it was aggressive. And you can see, let's say, the Vakatawa break, which was Healy makes a great tackle, he gets up and he hits him, he doesn't hold on to him. But if that's anyone else in the world other than Vakatawa, Healy gets him down. That's a brilliant cut out the overlap tackle by Healy. And that's all to do with the kind of that half moon shape rushing up on the outside, but coming up slower. And I think that's been coming all season. It was really nice to see it work against Racing, albeit they had a couple of like, you know, great breaks and tries, but you're going to take that against Racing. I think that one big note, I was extremely happy with the three front row changes. All came on. I think Ainger came on, and Delahunt and Duggan all came on and really put a marker down. They were very, very physical when they came on, and it kept that going, because it was one area that I was worried just about an inexperienced side of things was the change from Buckley, Beelum and Heff to three much kind of less experienced lads. I was like, Jesus, if Racing start dominating the scrum later on in the game and we have to make the changes, those lads mightn't be up for it. But geez, they did something special when they came on. They were really, really physical. Delahunt made a massive break that was so close, and then a try came from the next kind of phase. Duggan, who's probably his second or third game, he just after signing a pro deal this year, you know, let go by Leinster Academy a couple of years ago, he was hugely physical. And Ainger really started to kind of show what we got him for, because he hasn't done that yet this season. So there was some huge, huge individual performances. Our boy John Porch was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, like a magnet in the air, just absolutely really good, flying, yeah. Like taking really it off good. His own lads as well. Like
met some key tackles as well. He was really good. And I don't think this was brought up yet, but his boots were so sexy. Oh my God. Did you see the boots? Like they were like blue, but oh, they were just gorgeous. Send us on a pair, John. Well, yeah, cheers. but yeah, look, a great, good result. I know what you're saying, Wes, but look, you know, all in
look,
all,
losing bonus point away and against Racing, last year's finalists, anybody would take that.
Yeah, if you asked me before the game, which I'm pretty sure my girlfriend did, like, what did you want from the game? I was like, you know, not to ship a load of points, to be in and around it, to be competitive, to prove that this tournament isn't something that we qualified on because of the expansion to the amount of teams that qualified. Like, this is a tournament that we deserve to be in and that we can compete in. And, you know, the long-term goal over the next few years is to progress in the tournament. I don't think the goal ever this year was to progress in the tournament. The long-term goal should be. So I was happy with the performance, especially I read as well, and I'm not sure if it's definitely true, but it's an interesting one that I don't know if it was due to the COVID or if it's like the normal protocol, but they didn't do the captain's run in the stadium. So the first time they were in meeting that massive big screen was game day. So that's got to be intimidating. Like you've seen memes about that place for the last year or two about how great it is and how the atmosphere is good. And I know there's no fans there, but you know, that's the first time a lot of those players, most of those players, probably all of those players will have played there. So it was, you know, what an experience, and to show up the way they did. Racing, you know, people don't come close against Racing in France. And that was a great result, I think. Like I'm obviously disappointed we left it behind because it was there. But before the game, if you said, what do you want from the game? I was like, geez, if you could give me 4 points to get like down behind Racing, like I'd be happy out. Losing bonus point was definitely something I would have been bitten your hand off for.
Yeah, imagine playing NBA 2K or Warzone on that screen though. Oh, my God. That would be incredible. Also,
your
Racing... Your
Cowboys playing Call of Duty out of that for the game.
Yeah, exactly. This is a note to Racing. Change your fucking music that you play after someone scores a try, or at least switch it up.
When they're taking a line out. It wasn't even after a try. It was like that...
Put it on shuffle or something. Jesus. Get some other song. I'll send you on my playlist. Don't worry about it.
About an old Bon Jovi Fairy Tale in New York. Start blaring that.
it's offensive, Sam. So please, please keep your bigotry ways out of my podcast. Last, but I'm gonna say least, because it's just boring to talk about them. It's Leinster. They're really good. I was looking at the starting team. So these are the players that I have missing from that Leinster starting team on Sunday that would probably start if it was like, you know, a game to, you know, at the end of the world. You've got Larmour, Ringrose, James Lowe, Johnny Sexton, Gibson Park, Keane Healy, Furlong, Porter, Kelleher, and Dan Levy. I'm probably missing out one or two. They're all international, like, capped players. So why, this is just ridiculous. Like, you know, as we mentioned earlier on, Northampton, you know, your man, the coach after the game was interviewed after losing. He's like, yeah, there's no really no point. I'm just going to field out a team of youngsters and, like, give the boys a rest. It's like, after one loss against, and he's facing Leinster, he's like, we're done. What's the point? Like, what? It's just ridiculous at this stage.
Yeah, well, that attitude, like, we saw Gloucester as well against Leon. Like, they played no one. And, you know, their attitudes aside, like, they were young and they were inexperienced, but they didn't, like, we watched the game and they didn't look like they were trying at all. But that attitude is something I think the English teams are all going to adopt this season, because, you know, they've had a hectic schedule, what with the finishing off the league after COVID going into this season, you know, not too much time off, and then the Six Nations being on and English players at that. Whereas the French teams, they packed in the league early on in the, what I'm calling the lockdown period, that, like, when COVID was on, and then started their league back a couple of weeks ago and maybe about 10, 12 weeks ago at this stage, and they've been going through it. So I think that the English teams might just give up on this tournament because of how hard it would be to go the full distance, maybe outside of the likes of Exeter, who didn't lose too many team players to the English league. I think that, like, that Northampton going to Leinster next week, that's probably in their best interest in terms of keeping their players fit for the league, because there's a league there for them this year, especially without Saracens. But now back to the Leinster game. They're just so good. It's hard to really come up with anything else. I thought there was some good standout performances from players whose names I'd barely even heard of. So you just got to be worried as a fan of any other team that they are becoming as, like, overly dominant as we kind of joke about. And that is this competition without Saracens going to be as easy for them as the Pro 14 has been for the last few years. So hopefully they get a bit of a wake-up call with the introduction of these South African teams, or they start spreading the love and sending some players to academies across the country and making us more competitive to make, you know, to benefit the rest of Ireland. Because at the moment, like, that's a second or third string team in a Heineken Cup game, and they're putting 35 points on Montpellier. Like, it's too hard to do anything against that, like, personally. Like,
yeah, against Montpellier, it's not even, like, against a weak team, and it was in France as well. Like, it's Westy, Reese Ruddock should be in the Ireland squad. Prove me wrong.
I mean, like the only thing I could say is that there's such... Paul Boyle should be in the Ireland squad. Prove me wrong. Like, there's such competition for back row spaces. Like, you do forget, like, Reese Ruddock has captained Ireland on occasion, you know?
I didn't even know that.
But that offload for the first... Was it the first? No, second try. Josh Vandeleveers was the first. A brilliant score. Brilliant line from Josh Vandeleveers to get...
Yeah, and good turn of pace.
Yeah. But yeah, that little... And it's not even how good the offload is, because the offload itself is pretty average. But it's the decision making and Reece Ruddock to go, like, I could try and crawl for the line here and lose control of the ball or whatever, or I can just flick it up to was it Frawley on the outside who got it? It's just really intelligent, smart rugby. Like, I think that's how well drilled Leinster are. It's like at any means, finish the move. The move is there. Like, that's the receiver. Get the ball to them. And looking credits, I thought Frawley had a pretty good game too. I thought him and Henshaw were pretty interesting as a centre partnership. You have to give credit as well, like said, Harry Byrne wasn't even meant to be involved. Sexton pulled out, like, gets into the team. But on the Ruddock point, yeah, like, I think no more than the likes of Peter O'Mahony, he's one that is probably worth having in squads. Like, he probably does bring a bit of edge, a bit of grit to a team, and he clearly has. He's still clearly very skillful. It's just, like, who do you take him instead of? I suppose that's the only counter I have to your point.
Yeah, I know. I only say that because the last few games I have seen of Leinster, he's always been, like, standout good. Like, he's big, he's physical, which is sometimes what we lack in the Irish team. And I just think that he is incredible. But, you know, at the same time, I do get it.
Unfortunately, he kind of falls. I rate him so highly. I think he probably should be in around the Irish squad, definitely. And I like Westy's Paul Boyle point as well, because that's also true. But I think, unfortunately for him, is he's kind
not
of the
least, hashtag not biased.
He's kind of the least glamorous of the back rows at Leinster, and we know that Leinster could pretty much field an international back row, if not two full international back rows worth of talent that they have, and he's kind of the least glamorous. But he does so much of the nuts and bolts so well. He's so strong. He's so physical. He plays a lot of Pro 14 games. He captains Leinster on occasion. He captains Ireland on occasion. I think that that's probably to his detriment a little bit, because he just don't get noticed as much. Like, he won't make a massive, big, like, I'm a 22-year-old flanker, Caelan Dyrus, running the half the length of the pitch. But he will do all the stuff that a back row traditionally should be doing, which is the rucking, clearing, tackling, hitting, running. That sort of running short, kind of break the gain line yard. So it probably that's probably just where he falls down a little bit in people's opinions of him. Not that I question his ability at all. I just think that that's probably why he's not selected as much as he should be, or hasn't been selected as much as he should be in the long run. There's a lot of really, really exciting players in Leinster, and maybe some of the more traditional good quality players that aren't as exciting just get a bit kind of missed in the excitement of it.
Yeah, I agree. Rhys, come on the podcast. We'll talk about it.
Come to the coast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, we'll try and get Cipriani in. Sure, why not?
Jack Cardy. Cipriani is not fit to lace Jack Cardy's boots.
Stop talking nonsense. Just stop it. Jack Cardy is... I'm not even going to do it. We'll finish on the Rugby World Cup draw, which took place on Friday. It took about 7 hours to get through it.
Yesterday morning, wasn't it?
Oh, was it?
It's
sorry.
It was literally yesterday.
That's how bad it was that I forgot what it was. But terrible. I don't know why these TV stations think that it's a good idea to draw these things out. Just do the draw. But anyway, Ireland is in with South Africa, Scotland, and then it could be like a Russia, Samoa kind of thing, or Tonga. Something along
the
lines
of that. It'll be Tonga and Spain, I'd say.
Spain, okay. As tier two guy, Wesley, I take that. That's solid. You probably heard that. Did you? You probably heard that on the streets.
Well, it has to be Tonga or Samoa. That's
yeah,
Oceania.
Yeah, Samoa, eh?
In Tonga at the minute. I'm a big Tonga guy.
Big Tonga guy. Boys.
We're going to get Hippo Manga on this podcast now to shut you up, right?
Oh, yeah.
Get Bundy on. I'll talk about it with him, you know?
Well, we're working our way up to Bundy, okay? He's the final boss at Connacht, and we're on level... we're level three at the moment, okay? So, work on it.
Porgy is definitely it.
Like, no, I mean, we've had three people on. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
Obviously, the lot of talk of, you know, it's going to be very tough to qualify. And then when you do qualify, you have New Zealand and France. We've said this before in this podcast, and we'll say it again. You're not going to win World Cup playing easy teams. You're going to have to face these teams eventually. Even if you are on the other side, you're going to have to play, England, Australia, and then, you know, I can't think of other team probably, but you're not going to have an easy draw either way. Do you know what I mean? So, it is kind of pointless talking about who we have in our draw, because what's going to happen probably is we'll beat Scotland, I'd imagine. We'll beat Spain, Tonga, whoever. Probably play awful in those games, because that's what we do. And then probably lose South Africa, and then we'll lose to France or New Zealand. Case closed.
Yeah, but
if we'd
ended up with Argentina in our pool, we wouldn't have gotten out of the group, because we can't beat Argentina in the World Cup. So it is worth talking about the pool. Yeah. Like, it does matter.
Yeah, well, we didn't guess. Yeah, we never beat Argentina. So that's,
Also, I need to point out that this is the third World Cup in a row that it's been Fiji, Wales, Australia.
Poor Wales.
But people do seem more content with the idea of just losing to New Zealand in the semi-final, so they could say that they got to the semi-final. Like, they don't seem to know that, like, you got through those quarters, that they're all like, oh, we get one of those. You're going to get one of them after that, or you're going to get one of them in the final. So it's, you have to beat them. What I will say is, I think it's absolutely feckin' mental that they do the draw for the 2023 World Cup this year. Like, you look at France 3 years before the last World Cup, like, you'd be going, who are they? They've no plan, they've no team, it's all young lads, and then they grow into it. Like, 3 years is a huge amount of time in rugby. I think it's like 20-something competitive games. I think you said that earlier, Smurf, it's 26 competitive games they have scheduled.
Ireland, between now and then, have roughly 26-ish, in around that number of games. So not as many as you would think in that space.
No, it's not as many, but it's still, like, that's a good portion of games to be able to get ready. That's a good amount of time for the likes of a South Africa to capitulate, or a Scotland to capitulate. Anything can happen in 2 years in rugby, in 1 year. Like, we went from being the best in the world in 2018, or was it, I can't even remember which year it was which now.
2018, yeah.
Best in the world in 2018 to being absolutely dog shite in 2019. And that's 1 year. So you could go the opposite way in 3 years. any other team that is like this England or South African teams that are, or French that are touted being brilliant, in 2 years' time, it might have all fallen apart. A coach might have fallen out with someone. Anything could happen. But I will say that I'm not going to definitely say we'll beat Scotland. I just think that a Ben Healy run Scottish backline might put it to us. In
the that will but, be typical, yeah.
Further to Sam's point there, like, it's not even about doing a World Cup draw 3 years out, which first off is pretty stupid. The seedings are based off how the last World Cup finished. So, like, because South Africa and Japan haven't played a game of rugby since they got knocked out of the World Cup or since they won the World Cup, like, that's the seedings that we're taking. And it's like, well, we've played probably 10 international matches since the last World Cup. You know, like, as you say, like, look at how much can change in a year. Like, yeah, look, like, if you take the seed, the world seedings now versus the world seedings in the World Cup, it's completely different.
Japan have a proper pro league now. They're going to have 2-3 years of having a full, proper, full-fledged pro league. Like, that's going to change them drastically, and they're already competitive, but they're probably, you know, seeded a bit lower than they should have been. And then, like, the likes of Australia are going to be on the up. They're very low at the moment, so they're being seeded where they are. Like, the likes of Fiji, if they can get into an international tournament regularly, like, there's so much can happen in 3 years' time. Like, it's
so basically, lads, what you're saying, we have a chance.
What happened? Like, we're either going to play New Zealand in the quarterfinals or the hosts in the quarterfinals. So, flights home for.
Yeah, that's if we qualify out of the group. You know what I mean? But, like, you know the way lads do, you know, how many sleeps till Christmas? I'm going to do how many sleeps to the World Cup, which I just Googled. It's a 1,004 sleeps to the World Cup, boys.
Oh, so close. I can't wait.
I cannot wait. It's
ridiculous. Hello, we're going to need a camper van.
Yeah. We're all part of Andy's army. We're all off to Paris. Oh, it works.
Hey.
On that beautiful singing note, apologies for everyone who did listen to that. We'll end it there, boys. Appreciate you as always, and we'll catch you. We'll try and do one next week before we finish off for Christmas, boys. You know, maybe an old Christmas themed. Who knows? I might put on a white beard and a hat. And my belly, make my belly shake like a bowl full of jelly. We'll do it then. All right, boys. Appreciate you. Catch us next week.
Bye.
See you, boys.
Good luck.